Welcome, everybody, to the From Blog to Book panel session today here on Saturday. My name is John Hargrave, and I run a comedy website called Zug.com, Z-U-G.com. Been doing this site for about 12 years, making it the oldest humor site on the web. And based on the strength of that website, I was recently approached to do my first book, which is called Prank the Monkey, the Zug Book of Pranks, which is available in bookstores everywhere now and also here at the South by Southwest bookstore. I'll be signing afterwards. And here with me today is the famous and controversial blogger who runs the website called TuckerMax.com, which chronicles his drunken, sexual, hilarious exploits around the world, such as getting into a fist fight with a hockey mascot or making love to a midget. So,
making love is a strong word.
His first book is called I Hope They Serve Beer in Hell, and this thing has been monstrously successful. It went to the New York Times bestseller list. Really catapulted him into the national spotlight. He recently signed a deal to do a sitcom with Comedy Central, and it's my honor to introduce you guys to Mr. Tucker Max. Why don't we start off today? How many of you out here are not bloggers? How many are not? 20%, 15 to 20%, I would say. So everyone else is doing some kind of online publishing. Like we did for many years, and we want to tell you a little bit today about how we got our book deals and the whole process of turning web content into printed content. So, Tucker, first of all, why don't you start us off? Tell us, what was your story? How did you turn TuckerMax.com into your book?
The full story is pretty long, but basically what happened about 6 months after I put my site up in September 2002, about 2 months after that, MTV came to me and wanted to do like a mini documentary type thing about me, like a true life thing. And then they did that. It aired in May. And then 2 days later, one of my ex-girlfriends who I wrote a story about sued me. And the AP Wire picked up the story. It was a big First Amendment case. She was a former Miss Vermont. And I normally use fake names for everybody except myself. And I use her real name because she has a website up. You know, she was claiming she was sober and abstinent, and the first night I met her, we got drunk and fucked, so I used her real name. And, I mean, God bless you, but just don't lie about it. And so she sued me, and then, you know, I got all kinds of attention, and I had a bunch of book agents come at me, and they all kind of seemed like idiots, and they didn't know what they were doing. There was one guy, Bird Level, who was pretty smart, so I went with him. We took my book out. I got a bunch of, I got three offers, and they were all for, you know, nothing, $7,500. So being like the arrogant asshole that I was, or I was even worse at the time, 3-4 years ago. And I turned all of them down, because at that point I had sold, this is the second go around of my TV show. The first time I had sold it to, I had a bidding war between Fox and NBC, so I sold it to Fox. And I figured, well, you know, because I was too stupid to under... stupid is not the right word. I didn't have enough experience to understand how the system works. So I thought, well, you know, if all these networks are bidding on my show, clearly it's going to be on TV. So I'll just, you know, get a better deal in 6 months. Well, of course, like, I wouldn't do the show the way they wanted to. So they're just like, well, fuck you. We'll move on to the next person. And then I was left, like, 3 months later with nothing but my dick in my hand. So then a couple months later, I had this guy, Jeremy Ruby Strauss, come and email me, and he worked for Kensington, which is basically a Harlequin book, like a romance book house. And Jeremy was the one editor there who was really smart, understood the internet, and understood publishing, and he offered me $7,500. And so, of course, I had to swallow my pride and just say, all right, fine, I'm going to... Because at the end of the day, the advance really doesn't matter. Advance is just an advance on sales. It's a loan that the book company gives you, a loan against your royalties. And so,
yeah, we should probably just say that real quick. So if you don't know the advance, as Tucker just said, so if you don't make that money back in sales, you essentially get to keep your advance. If you make more than that, obviously you're going to get any royalties
right
above and beyond your $7,500 or whatever your advance is.
So Jeremy actually basically, I was still kind of arrogant when he came at me, but he kind of pimped me a little bit. And he's like, look, stop being, you know, a pussy. He's like, you think you're that great. You think you have this many fans. Well, then prove it. You know, bite this bullet now, write a great book, and prove to them that they were wrong. So I did that, and so then basically, you know, I wrote the book 6 months. It came out, and I had to fight. Oh, God, you wouldn't believe the battles I had to fight. All right, you see this cover? Great cover, right? I designed it myself because the cover art that they sent me was, it was the worst abortion of design I've ever seen. They had, like, 8 pictures of my head all over the site, and, like, the title in, like, fucking AIM speak, like all different size letters and stuff. And
I think this is a great point because, you know, when you're doing a blog out there and running a site like we have for so long, you have complete creative control. You know exactly what's on every page. You can change anything that doesn't make you happy at any time. So I found it very frustrating to be working, you know, as part of a system or just a very different kind of situation where you've got an editor, you've got a designer, you've got people who are working, and obviously you felt the same frustration.
Yeah, right. It was really annoying. So I fought them. I finally got it done the way I wanted. I got the back cover the way I wanted. And then my book came out. And so, of course, you know, you're thinking, well, at the time my site was getting about 400,000 unique users a month. And, you know, I don't know, 1 million, 2 million page views a month. And so I figured with all this traffic, I'm going to get a lot of media attention, right? Nothing. Like, when I say no book reviews, I mean no fucking book reviews. Like, maybe, like, 5 college newspapers did a book review. This is before the book came out. Maybe 5 college newspapers. That's about it. The New York Times mentioned my book in a blurb, in a piece about, like, not the Warren St. John piece later on, but they had this little piece that, just because my agent, I got lucky, my agent was, like, sleeping with some girl at the New York Times. So she gave him, like, a bone. Or whatever, he gave her a bone. And they mentioned my piece.
You should share the name of that agent later, by the way, just in case.
So, nothing. But thankfully, because I had built up such... at this time, it was my book came out January of 06. And so my website had been up at this point 3.5 years. I had such a big fan base. My book sold enough to get me on the bestseller list for a couple weeks and get me attention. Then once I got on the bestseller list, then I got some more media attention. Really not all that much, though. I mean, you can count on one hand the number of pieces that have been done on me that are, like, real, from a real newspaper or a real magazine or whatever. And nonetheless, about a year, 13 months out now, 12, 14 months out from PubDate, and I've sold almost 150,000 books sold, almost 200,000 in print, and, you know, the book's, you know, going great. I signed a second book deal with Simon Spotlight for $300,000, and I could have held out for a whole lot more, but I wanted to go, Jeremy left Kensington, I went to Simon, so... I wanted to go there.
And those are really incredible numbers. I should just point this out, that 200,000 books is it's stratospheric, really, especially for a first-time author. With no press. Usually a book, I guess 5,000 books is kind of the break-even point for most first-time authors. So a general publisher in a paperback, trade paperback, will be looking for you to sell about 5,000 copies, which is harder than it sounds. It's really difficult. And what I think is great about blogging is that you do have this opportunity to build an audience, and essentially, like you did and like I'm doing with my website, is you sell directly to that audience.
Right.
So most first-time authors will be going out, and that's why they do the traditional book tour and the road show, because they're trying to find that audience. Beyond their family and friends, they're trying to find out who it is, who's interested in what they have to say. But as a blogger, you have this huge built-in advantage that you can go out and speak directly to your folks, and you can make it very easy for them to buy the book right off your website, just 2 clicks onto Amazon, and they can get the book. So, talk a little bit about, I liked hearing how much traffic you had at that point in the Miss Vermont story, right. And all that certainly helped you.
I can't emphasize this enough. I know I get a lot of people, bloggers, writing me, asking me how to get a book deal, how to do that stuff. The most important thing is having good content. And all these people write me and like, oh yeah, I've got great content, and I look at their blog and it's dog shit. Like, I wouldn't clean up my dog shit.
Which is not bad if you're doing a book on dog shit.
Right.
But if that's not your topic, stay away from
right.
that.
And like, you know, there are a lot of talented people out there that mainstream media, mainstream publishing overlooks, no question. Myself being, you know, one of the prime examples. I mean, you get on the list, there's tons of them. But most people who think they can write can't. So, I mean, but whatever. Let's just assume you have good content. At that point, the most important thing you can do, I think, is if you're going to take the blog to book route, is develop your site and work on your site and put time in. I mean, like,
yeah,
I don't know.
It really
if you
is a day in, day out commitment.
I don't know if you guys have read my stuff, but, you know, I'm not, you know, fucking Tolstoy. You know, I'm not an amazing writer. I'm pretty good. I tell a pretty good story. It's pretty funny. But I put
a lot.
You're
like a very promiscuous drunken Tolstoy.
No,
actually, I've always thought that.
No,
possibly Dostoevsky.
No.
I'm not sure.
No,
but.
No, no, not at all. But like, I put a lot of work in my site, and I put a lot of work in promoting my site, and you know, I built relationships with College Humor. Like Ricky Van Veen is here, and I've known him for 4 or 5 years, and they pimp my site every 6 months. And
relationships
are
huge on the web. That can't be overstated.
Nothing's more important than driving traffic to your blog than getting it linked on aggregation sites or on other really big sites.
Especially sites that have to do, so in our case, it's kind of young male humor.
Right.
Sites that have to do with your topic.
Right.
That's really, really key.
Right. I mean, if you're writing a tech blog, you need to get linked on Gizmodo or Gadget or, Engadget, whatever. I mean, you guys, aren't dumb. You can figure that out. But wherever your market is, there's somebody big in that market. You should make friends with them. And it was pretty easy for me because my stuff's good to begin with, and it's right in that market. And then, I just emailed them, and I'm like, look, guys, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then, and of course, this is being, recorded. I used to do little tricks, I'd create a bunch of fake email accounts and submit, the same story 8 times to College Humor. And so, if 20 people submitted it, half of them were mine or whatever. I don't do that stuff anymore because I'm big, but when I was small, 6 months out, internet, big for the internet, yeah. Right?
He only has to do 2 fake email addresses.
Right.
No, that's
no, I actually,
for success.
I actually hire people to do that now.
Oh,
or I tell my minions to do that now.
Cool.
But, you can do stuff like that, which is whatever. Turn your nose up at now, but there's a reason I'm sitting on the panel and you're not. It's because I did stuff like that early on. If your stuff is good, then it won't matter. If it's not good, it won't go anywhere. If it's good, it'll get picked up. If it's not, it won't.
I like talking about the book deal. I think the traditional route for getting a book deal is it's like a 10-step process. You write a book, you send it to agents who ignore you. Then you send it to publishers who also ignore you. Then you lapse into severe depression, become an alcoholic,
I didn't know you had
kill yourself. Then your mom or widow continues taking it out,
arguing
that you are a misunderstood genius. And then an agent finally takes interest because dead people always sell better. And then he calls his contact at Random House, and the two of them do a deal over Spago over lunch, and then profit.
Right.
And I think what's great about the internet and our experience certainly is that we were kind of approached and people kind of came to us. I never went out looking for a book deal. I always had it in the back of my mind that I would like to do something like this. But again, Jeremy Ruby Strauss, who was our first editor,
guy, right?
that's we share that history. And Jeremy just emailed me one day and said, hey, I've done a couple of these internet books. They've done really well for us. Would you like to write one? And you always have this sort of, mental image of you and an agent kind of cutting this deal over some upscale Manhattan bistro or something. And it literally came in a 2-line email with no punctuation.
Yeah, that's how Jeremy writes.
So the reality is always much less glamorous than you think it is.
I mean, honestly, guys, I can tell you right now, authoritatively, the industry is starving for good content.
This is true.
The problem is not finding people to buy your content. The problem is writing good content. Once you write good content, there's so many ways. Okay, let's just say you have Blog X, which is good. First, do everything you can to promote it. Email, whatever. Make friends with Gawker if that's your market, whatever. And generally speaking, probably someone's going to come to you. But if they don't, go to... Look who's signed. Go find people like John or like me or like Maddox or like whoever who have books out, who started as bloggers. Just email them and ask them, who's your agent? Who's your publisher? Can you refer me? I've referred 2 dozen people to Bird, my old agent. I do all my stuff myself now.
I actually wrote John Hodgman, who wrote The Areas of My Expertise, who's the guy in the Apple ads and everything now, and he was kind enough to write me back. So people are a lot more accessible than you
right.
think.
Yeah, whenever people said, look, I have a blog, whatever, I want to... do this. I'll refer them to my agent, and as long as it's not even if it's awful, I don't care. It's not nothing on my nose. It's really easy to find these people. There aren't a whole lot of agents and book publishers and book editors who understand the internet and understand good content, but there's a lot of there's enough of them that you can get if your stuff's good. It's really not hard to sell it. I started a company called Rudius Media, just basically which does this. I run about 20 sites right now, and I find authors come to me basically, and we do everything. We produce their site, we host, we take them out to book companies. I've sold a Coloring Book Land book, which is now out. If anyone's read the Bunny Blog, she's got a book deal. I got Phil Lawyer a book deal. I got Three of my other sites are going to sign book deals in the next 3 months, plus my other book deal. It's really easy. It's no problem. Once you have good content, there's lots of people who want to find it.
I really like that you're focusing on good content, because that's the one thing you can't fake on the internet. Everybody knows that. When somebody passes you something along, you instantly know whether it's any good or not. So that's the key challenge. And I have a day job. I work in advertising. I'm a creative director at this Boston ad agency. I'm looking for flash designers, by the way, if anybody wants to talk to me. And, you know, we often try to talk about, a lot of people talking about viral buzz and trying to get things out there. And I keep telling everyone, my mantra is, you can't fake good content. It's either good or it's not. And you really have to work at it. It's a daily commitment to continue to do great content. Right. So it's quality, but then we were also talking before the panel about quantity as well.
Right.
There's that idea of the more content you have out there, the more stuff you have for people to find, for Google to slurp up, for people to get through search results and stuff.
We were talking about, like, it's a whole other panel discussion is how to promote a book, you know, or promote a blog. But, I mean, the short end of that stick is basically word of mouth is by far the most potent, most important tool in your repertoire. And word of mouth is basically just good content, you know. You're exactly right. You can't fake it, you know. If it's good, people email it to their friends, they tell their friends, and people read it. Yeah.
One of the funny things about doing what we do is we're both nonfiction writers, so we both do these kind of outrageous things, and then we write about our true life stories. But then, so you're doing the blog, and you're trying to have these experiences, and then you're doing a book, and you're trying to promote the book, and you're trying to keep the blog going, and you're juggling so many things. At some point, you find, like, you're running out of material because you don't have time to go do anything anymore.
Right. Oh,
so
dude,
how do you juggle all the
It's a disaster for me now. No, seriously, like, I can't...
Like, our lives are the most boring lives on the planet right now.
Seriously, it's funny. People think, you know, I'm hanging from chandelier drunk every night. I mean, that was me at 26. At 31, I'm like, I go out once a week. I'm like, I walk my dogs at 7 in the morning. I'm like, seriously, I become like a fucking old man. I don't know. That's a great question. I really don't know. Like, I don't go out anywhere near as much. But I've grown up, you know. You just grow, you change as an artist. The only thing, that's a whole other discussion. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I'm trying to figure that out right now. Yeah. It was real easy at the beginning because, you know, I mean, everyone goes out and gets drunk and acts like an idiot. I was just another idiot in the bar. Yeah. Just because I wrote the stuff down well is why, like, people know who I am, you know.
The Pope, by the way, does not go out and get drunk. I just want to point that out. Inconsistency. Speaking for myself, you know, I said I have this day job, and my kind of daily schedule at this point is I wake up in the morning at, like, I don't know, 6, and I basically do like 2 hours of work on the website or on my book or whatever I'm working on at the moment. That's kind of my second job. Then I go do my day job from 9 to 6, and then come home. I have a family. I have 2 kids, and then at night, after everybody goes to bed about 9 or 9:30, I work for another 2 or 3 hours at night. So that's kind of my insane punishing schedule that I live right now. But that's how I try to balance the two. And I think for all of you, or for most of you, you probably do have some kind of day job that it has to be taken into account. And you've got to figure out how to work that time in. But my best advice is just to make a habit out of it, make a routine.
Let's take questions.
If
anyone has questions, just stand up. You don't have to get the mic. I don't care. Go ahead.
How much of your content came directly from your website?
For my first book, it was half. I took because I wrote my first book with the idea in mind that the main audience was going to be people who hadn't seen my site, because my fans are going to buy my book anyway, you know, as long as I, you know, respect them to some extent. So I put half new material in the book, and like the really classic stories that had kind of launched me, the ones, you know, the ones that people had emailed back to me saying, look how funny this is, you know, or emailed to me and said, you plagiarized this guy. I'm like, asshole, I wrote that. Like, those stories, I put in the, oh, that happens to me still, to this day, I get that. But people accuse me of plagiarizing myself, that's awesome. But that first book was half and half. The next book is all new material. And it's all stuff that, like, happened to me, whatever, that I just never wrote up or, you know, like, because a lot of my stories are stuff, I started writing basically what happened as I was going forward and a few old things, but it was mostly, it was about half and half. But I think to be successful, you got to have at least half new material. You know what a lot of people try and do, which is a real big mistake, is, okay, like, everyone knows What Would Tyler Durden Do, the website, right? Like, the site is about dogging celebrities, right? And so he wanted to do a book, And he wanted to do a book about like something else, something retarded. I don't know, like parrots or something.
Stick with your strengths. Right. Stick with what people
and
know you
for. I told him, like, dude, no, you're not famous for writing about parrots. You're famous for writing about celebrities. You need to call your book "Who Would Tyler Durden Fight?" And dog celebrities do the same thing. You know, once you become a star in X field, then you can write about X field. But you're a star in Y field now. Write about Y field.
Yeah.
And a lot of bloggers do that. Like Mill Millington was probably one of the. Still, to this day, one of the great... He wrote Things My Wife or Girlfriend and I Argue About. I mean, that thing is tear... I cry laughing at that thing. It's so funny. And his book is awful. It's just awful fiction about Russian spies or something. Oh, it's disastrous. And, like, you really, really need to stick to... If you get famous for something, at least for the first book, second book, stick to that. You want to do something else, start a different site. And do it there and get famous for that, then you can write a book about that.
Yeah, you know? So two great points here I just want to reemphasize. One is stick with what's gotten you to the point you're at. And I almost made the same mistake. Jeremy talked me out of it and said, write a book of pranks. That's what everybody knows you for your site.
Exactly.
That was great advice. And the second one is the whole question about, is it targeted toward your website users or is it targeted toward a new audience? And how much recycled material do you use? My editor fought hard on this. He wanted it 100% new stuff. I felt like, you know, if you're an established stand-up comedian, if you're Chris Rock or George Carlin, you don't do an HBO special of untested material. You go out and you hone it at clubs every single night. So you want kind of the best. But at the end, we sort of compromised. My book is two-thirds new stuff, one-third best-of stuff from the website. And I felt like that was a good compromise at the end.
Go ahead. I don't know. It's kind of a good question. I've never written any other books. I mean, like, this is basically just the same stuff I wrote on my site. I don't know. I hardly even consider myself a writer, but I don't know. I mean, I just write what I write. When I write, I never think about who my audience is or you know, I don't think about anything but telling my story in my authentic way. And I mean, like, you know, I produce 20 writers, and all of them make the same mistake at one point or another. They write the way they think they're supposed to. You know, I mean, my undergrad degree is in pre-law. I went to law school. I've never taken a creative writing class in my life. I have problems with, you know, T-O and T-O-O. I don't know where to put apostrophes. I don't know any of this shit. But it doesn't matter because I can tell a story. Because I write in my authentic voice. And that's why, you know, like all these people with perfect grammar are sitting here with unsigned, unsold manuscripts, you know, and I'm on this panel, is because I tell a great story and I write in my authentic voice, which is, that's a, don't think about web, not web, just write, you know? That's the most important
thing. I'll add one thing, which is the speed, because writing for a blog is these quick, you know, I come up with an idea in the morning, I put it on the web in the noon, and by afternoon I've got comments, I know if it's any good or not. The book was like a laborious 3-year process. It was really, really.
It took me 3 years to write that book?
Yeah, it really did. It took a long time and it was hard. And the other thing was kind of like this blank canvas that you have in a book, all these pages to fill, which I actually found, I've heard a lot of authors say that that's very confining, but I found that very liberating because that was much better than a quick blog post. You could develop themes and so forth.
Go ahead. Right.
For a lot of blogs, I'll go, and if it's more than 4 or 5 paragraphs, I don't have the time to sit there and read 8 paragraphs. But your shit is so good that I'll sit there and read it for like an hour and a half.
Content is king, dude, yeah. Everything I write, I think, if I don't want to write it, if I don't want to read it, then why the hell is someone else going to want to read it? Everything. Snap it off, right. Yeah, right. I mean, that's any writing, though, dude. Any writing. Norman McLean had a great... I don't know if this is just in the movie or it's also in the book. I can't remember because it's been so long, but like his dad did a drill with him where like he would write an essay and his dad would be like half. You know, he kept cutting it in half until he got to the core of the story. I do that all... I mean, you know, I'll write a piece and it'll be 20 pages. By the time I publish it, it's 13. I cut all the shit out of it. Yeah, it's important.
And before we move on, I just want to let everybody know, I'm going to be mixing up something from Tucker's book called The Tucker Max Death Mix. And you can see the ingredients here. It's lemon, lime, Gatorade, Red Bull, and Everclear. So I'm going to be mixing this up, and this will get you started for tonight. I'm going to pour out Dixie cups if anybody
wants
to have
one.
Let's take our next question while I do this.
Don't. This is seriously. Every time I've drank this, I've woken up like,
yes,
I don't know where I am with vomit all over me. It's awful. It's awful. Mine was totally different. No, mine was totally different. My book has actually changed the way a lot of publishing looks at books. And I only know this, I don't talk to publishers, my agent, my editor tell me, but my book launched, I sold about 5,000 copies the first week, 4,500 the second week, about 3,000 the third week, and then I leveled off about 2,000, then I went down to about 1,500, and then like all of a sudden, actually I bottomed out 1 week, I think at $9.98, and then all of a sudden it started going up and up and up, and I sold, my best week ever was the week before Christmas of 06. Well, a year after my book came out, and now I'm selling about, I mean, you can check all these numbers on BookScan, please feel free. I'm maybe about 2,000 a week now I'm selling, which is, you know, like, that just doesn't happen. You don't get books that are backlist that are selling 2,000 a week, but it's because I have a website that continues to promote it, and my content is, like, so good that I get a lot of word of mouth. And so, like, that's why it helps. I mean, having a website that's really, if you just throw up a website after you have a book, you don't have an audience. You don't have an engine driving it. My website was first, and so it continues to drive people to the book, I think.
Well, I'm told that we have time for one more question here.
We got 100 people in here. They're going to kick us out for a CSS conference.
They're going to kick us out. Yes, sir. You back there, right there, and with your hand up, yes.
Is there a type of content that you think you can't move to a blog?
Is there a type of content you think you can't translate into a book?
I think it depends. I've thought about this a lot, actually, because for my company, I get everyone coming at me with, I want to do a blog about this, a blog about this. Some stuff you can't move into it. I think, Jeff Jarvis's blog is great. I read it, but that's not going to be a book, because it's if it's something that's very timely, like a news thing, or if it's very much about, like, you know, like tech stuff or gadget stuff, it's about the moment in time. So no one gives a crap about that book, because it's going to be, you know, 2 years old. Who wants to read a book about the iPhone in 6 years, you know, like with a bunch of posts about that? That doesn't make any sense. It's got to be something that I think has some sort of story value to it, you know? Like, even if it's, I mean, pranks, that's still a story. My stuff is stories. Like, every book I've sold has something that, like, you know, even if the coloring book land is just comics, but, you know, it's like, it has some value that is timeless, you know, that's not cemented to one certain specific moment in time.
So, guys, I think we need to wrap it up here. I just want to put in a quick plug. On my website, prankthemonkey.com/bookblog, I actually wrote an 8-part series on the making of my book and how I turned my blog into a book, if you want to check that out. I'm also going to be doing signings afterward for my book, Prank the Monkey. Please thank Mr. Tucker Max for coming and gracing us.
You guys,
with his presence today.
I have.
And if anybody would like a shot up here, we have
Tucker.
No,
dude, seriously. I'm not kidding.
Go ahead.
You guys, I'm gonna be at the author thing next door at like 4 or 4:30 for the beer. So if you guys want to come, ask me questions, whatever, I'll be there. So we can continue this then.